There are only 18 two-headed nickels, known to coin collectors as snickles, known to presently exist. The United States Mint reports that about 200 were accidentally put into distribution in 1990 as a result of what officials call
a mechanical virus.
Many have already been lost or destroyed. Therefore, this incredibly rare coin is a numismatic's holy grail. Many have devotedly endured the sacrifice of waiting that follows their young faces as they return to dust. The snickle feels slightly heavier than a nickel when balanced in the center of the hand. In this way, there is no difference between the two-headed nickel and Klaus,
the famous two-headed boy.
Klaus was born with two heads that shared one body. Klaus could read twice as fast as normal children. After the death of one head in 1922, Klaus continued reading, learning about others with similar conjoining. In the early part of the 20th century, two-headed children were called a two-person. And through his reading, Klaus learned that when one head of a two-person dies, the other will not die immediately, but will slowly waste away as his body fills with the bacteria of the dead. After the death of his own head in 1922, Klaus was not upset. He continued to read and lingered devotedly in an end-of-life ritual of waiting. The death of a head of a two-person triggers the spread of a deadly virus that seems to enforce the age-old theory that the living cannot share the same body as the dead. Klaus understood that the death of his other head meant the impending death of his own head, as the body of his head fills with the bacteria of the dead. Klaus was aware of his certain death because he read it in books, as he read about others with similar conjoining. He understood that the death of his other head meant that it would fill with bacteria, swelling up to twice its normal size, spreading a virus throughout the shared body. He was not upset about this in any way. After all, it was not the fault of the virus that it was killing him. The virus was just trying to survive. And in 1922, the body of Klaus's head stopped working, killing one head instantly and letting the other head waste away in an end-of-life ritual of waiting. Klaus remained alive for 6 hours after his first head died, which suggests that the living may, in fact, share the same body as the dead for a brief, reflective period. Dr. Armand is always thinking about his nickel. He levitates it in his palm, always surprised by the slight difference in weight. He clearly remembers the day he found it, the crisp feel of the air. Venice. Blue-gray tint. This was his second trip to Venice, the first time he was 16, and now he's an old man. 40, 50, then 60. Always surprised by the slight difference between the way his time passes and the way others pass the time. There are moments before falling into a deep sleep that he winces in pain, thinking about all of this time passing. When he was a boy, he would dress up in a homemade costume, calling himself Dr. Awkward, world-renowned comedic magician. First, he would sassafras across the apron of the stage, and then pull dynamite from buckets or turn his hand into a chunk of chocolate and bite it. The imagined throngs of gleeful patrons were highly amused by his japes and sleights of hand. On rainier days, he just sat in his room and drew piles of pictures of people sleeping. This alarmed his parents, who thought the figures were dead. The thought of a child with a morbid imagination was unacceptable to his parents. They had hopes for a child untouched by the same castration anxieties that blew them, the wind, the strange thoughts connected to the weather. The body feels better wet. When wet can feel the wind better, the wind, the body, wet. Wetter. This marked the first endeavor into magic, art, and performance for Armand. He had such an impulse to create art, not even for commercial reasons, but for the simple pleasure of seeing everything that happened happen again. They'd all be hanging out in his room, having a good time, and yeah, mixing it up, but beads of sweat gathered on his brow, and his right eyebrow was doing that thing it does to confirm his stage presence. They had no idea that deep down, he wanted to record everything. Have his face and theirs documented at every angle, he would make them happen again and again in the vanity of reproduction. On the other hand, Jill is waiting at the bar. She is alone and soaking in the drama of a golden cowboy dream. She ended it with George. Her hours were cut down to 25 a week, and there's Glen Campbell in the background. Of course, there is nothing specific that Jill is waiting for here at the wagon wheel, but there is still a sense of hopeful expectation that clings to the scene. She spent many nights on this very stool, waiting for something more than nothing to happen, but it never does. But maybe tonight is the night. Maybe Mr. Wright is going to walk through that door and sit down right next to her, slap a 50 down on the bar, and start talking up a conversation about love. Tonight could be the night when the big, strong guy folds her in half with his delicate, fawning fingers, puts her in his airtight Jordache back pocket, and carries her off in lurid adventures untold. They sometimes left each other for long periods of time, but never felt alone. In each other, they had found a partner, someone to provide companionship through life and chase until dead. There was a letter once, written by Jill while in a foreign country, with the soundtrack of a dying cello in the ancient corridors below. "Dearest Rudge, I am here now and you must come then. Quickly, go to me. Fetch me out of here and I'll fetch you too. Upon our escape, we will discover that once you leave for the place you've been longing for, you begin longing for the place you just left. So then, now you must bring me back from whence you had just removed me, and henceforth back and forth and back and forth, yours forever following your footsteps, female equivalent." "Alas," cried the good doctor, "it is she. I will fetch her. Will I fetch her? Her fetch I will, her fetch will I." Unable to write her back, he just held it there, his wrist arched, floating, solid daylight, a balance. Eventually a tree, more solid all the time. Nevertheless, in the end, his petrification turned out to be roots from which the ends of things with beginnings derived. And dearest Rudge carried on in a cycle that began before he did. I did. Did I?